Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
And I'm Nabil Biagio, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, January 8th, 2015. The South Sudan Civil Alliance resists attempts by the ruling party to control its organization.
The first day we met this civil society, SPLM, get it from me, they all came armed with pistols. A number of them are actually working for national security.
And the warring parties in South Sudan react to calls for the U.S. to place an all-out arms embargo on the country.
Well, even in America, there are individuals who are committing offenses. Yes, there are crimes being committed by individuals. This does not mean that the government has failed to provide the necessary protection.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance today accused the ruling party, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, or SPLM, of plotting to silence its operations in the country by forcibly seizing control of the alliance's leadership. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu has the story from Juba.
David Dow, the spokesman for the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, told the reporters at a Juba news conference that the alliance has come under attack by South Sudan's ruling party, the SPLM. Dow says the SPLM has illegally constituted new leadership in recent months aimed at overthrowing the legitimate leadership of the alliance. He contends the move was intentionally designed to undermine the independent work of the alliance. Dow says the SPLM wants to ensure that its agenda in the country is not questioned.
The first day we met this civil society, SPLM, get it from me, they all came armed with pistols. A number of them are actually working for national security. Some of them are working for the SPLM. And it is important to know that the intention is actually to dilute the work of civil society, just as they did in Addis Ababa. The real civil society was flushed out, and they brought in the civil society of their interest.
Deng Atuai, the chairperson of the alliance, says the SPLM move started last year in November after he accused the party leadership of focusing on issues that are not a priority instead of restoring peace in the country. Atuai says that the government, which is run by the SPLM ruling party and participating in peace talks with the rebels aligned with the former vice president Riek Machar, is focused on prioritizing individual interests rather than the national good. He calls it unfortunate that the peace talks have been unsuccessful in yielding any relief for the suffering of millions of South Sudanese citizens affected by a crisis which he argues SPLM instigated.
It came when I raised the issues that concerning the grassroots, telling the president in front of him that your son is not in the military in Makiamanyor and Riek Machar has no son in the World Army. And I'm arguing with what is on the wall, what have been the topic that been discussing. They were talking about the powers between the president and the prime minister. And I was surprised. I say, no, we have to talk about what we are going to do to the people that you have been killed in between, women and children. This should be the topic, how we are going to pay them back.
Dow says the plan is being coordinated by the party and that it also involves high-level politicians who are constitutional stakeholders. Dow could not provide any evidence to justify some of the alliance accusations, but insists the alliance will be ready to reveal that information in a court of law.
We have a legal battle to undergo because they are using a name that they do not actually own. We have all the certificates of registrations. We are the legitimate institution. Our executive body is still in charge and they're running the office.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, formed in 2011, is an umbrella organization consisting of not less than 100 civil society groups operating in South Sudan. It was established with the aim of building a vibrant and credible civil society capable of effectively advocating on behalf of the people of South Sudan regarding issues of public concern. Threats directed at the alliance and its leadership are not new. Atuai survived a murder attempt last year by a known gunman who attacked him in front of the alliance office and fired shots in his direction. A year earlier, he suffered at the hands of unknown kidnappers for 3 days before being released. In recent years, Atuai was accused of criticizing government corruption and calling for accountability. SPLM officials deny they are behind any influence or plan of a takeover of the alliance. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu from Juba.
South Sudanese refugees in Uganda are objecting to the government's decision to go ahead with planned elections in June of this year. They say the government's priority should be to restore peace across the country and that any election held in this current state of conflict would neither be free nor fair. This report was written by Bonifacio Taban in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. VOA fellow Michael Atit has more.
Though they live far away from home, South Sudanese refugees in Kampala are closely following the government's plans to conduct general elections in June this year, and they insist it is not the right time. 25-year-old Martha Nyawura says the priority should be to restore peace so that people like her who fled the violence can return home and participate in the elections process.
I need peace before, because when peace comes, then election will be there. But without peace, no election, because there's nobody now in South Sudan. And all people, they are inside of enemies, everywhere in refugees. So election, I don't see the election and the peace. If he need peace, let him sit down with the people of South Sudan. Then he will know which number is there in South Sudan.
Nyawura says she is still too afraid to return to South Sudan. If the government pushes ahead with the election plans, Nyawura says she will not vote.
I will not try to vote because what I'm seeing now, when I vote to someone whom I like, so the government will kill me. That is why I need peace. Then people will be free in South Sudan. But because now there is no freedom in South Sudan, how can you vote when there is no freedom? Unless when you are Denka, then you can get freedom in South Sudan.
21-year-old Jeremiah Gatluak is another refugee. He says due to the ethnic undertones that characterize South Sudan's conflict, it will be difficult for voters to choose their leaders on the basis of merit.
Voting is something that is a personal choice, and no citizen can vote when there is a threat coming. So to me, there will be no direct vote that I may think would be useful, because even the government is divided and the army is divided. So whom are you going to vote? Are you going to vote the partial part of the country to power? So that will not work. To me, I'm not going to participate in that voting.
Gatluak says it is not appropriate for the government to discuss elections when relatives of people who died since the outbreak of violence in mid-December last year are still mourning their losses. He believes the focus must be ensuring justice for people affected by the violence.
At the moment, we are at war. So many people are displaced. So many people lost their loved one. There's a serious trauma that need to be reconciled first so that people can think about election. I suppose the government should deal with the conflict first than rushing to election.
Weylik Liom believes the decision to conduct elections will worsen the violence and displace more people. She says a more urgent need is to help the nearly 2 million people forced from their villages to return home.
The country is in crisis. I don't see into it that it should be the good idea for the election to be carried out in 2015 because more people are now in the UN camp, and the situation in South Sudan is so volatile that could not encourage the election to take place.
Liom calls on opposition parties in government to disown the ruling SPLM party from pushing ahead with a planned vote.
I'm seeing other parties are condemning the way the government is trying to insisting to conduct the election. And when the stakeholders, those are going to play major part in elections, are not convinced for the election to take place, I think the government should have to rethink not to continue with the election.
For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Washington.
A South Sudanese official is criticizing a U.S. State Department travel warning about his country. The advisory issued last June but extended yesterday warns U.S. citizens against travel to South Sudan. It says the government has limited capacity to deter crime or provide security to travelers. especially outside the capital, Juba. In the advisory issued yesterday, it notes a high risk of violent crime in Juba and frequent carjackings and banditry. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe tells VOA's James Batty it appears the U.S. has a hidden agenda against his government.
This is a very unfortunate report being presented by people who do not even move outside Juba. The issue of individual crimes being committed by people is a normal thing. South Sudan is not an exception. It is part of this world. Even in America, there are individuals who are committing offenses. Yes, there are crimes being committed by individuals. This does not mean that the government has failed to provide the necessary protection. Crimes which are being committed are individual crimes and they are being apprehended.
It says that violent crime is very high in Juba, particularly carjackings and banditry are common in South Sudan.
Well, these are individual reports which are being written by biased people who do not even know what they are writing. We cannot respond to reports which are written in generalities. If there are any specific cases to be reported, then this is where we can respond. Otherwise, a report of general nature like that is very unfortunate, it is unfounded, it is baseless.
Mr. Minister, I think this warning perhaps emulates particularly from the fact that your country continues to be involved in this civil war.
Well, of course, yes, we are involved in the civil war, but does the reporter know who is responsible for the delay of peace up to this moment? This also takes me to another unfortunate situation whereby you find all the reporters reporting and charging the two parties of dragging their feet and that they don't care about the lives of their people. The government of the Republic of South Sudan is fully committed to peace and it has been working ever for attainment of peace in South Sudan. But peace cannot just come from one side. As we know very well, in the last session, the rebels had reneged from whatever we had agreed upon. There is a party which is obstructing, and that party is well known to everybody by now. Nevertheless, those who have their other ill intentions would all the time be writing that the parties are not genuine, the parties are not serious, and so forth and so forth.
That is South Sudan's Information Minister, Michael Makwe, speaking to VOA's James Batty earlier today from Juba.
A spokesperson for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs calls it unnecessary for the U.S. State Department to extend the travel warning. Mawien McCall Arik says he's surprised by the move and says sporadic fighting occurs only in a small part of the country.
Civil states are all secured. These three states that have also insecurity, the government is trying to open corridors which will allow the humanitarian system to deliver food. So for anybody that is coming to this country, the government is providing safety and we are protecting everybody here in this country, whether foreigners or citizens.
McCall argues that robberies and car hijackings in Juba are isolated events which he says can happen in any city in the world.
All these other cities, you know, all these metropolitan cities, they have these crimes. These are just an isolated crime that happens from time to time. And we can even get them all, even the Western cities also. The fact that on the New Year Eve, there were gunshots. Those were actually violations that happened from different soldiers that decided to do so without the consent of the government. And the government is dealing with this now.
Nighttime robberies were common in Juba even before the conflict broke out in December 2013. The government increased night patrols by police and military units in 2014 and launched a hotline about 6 months ago for civilians to report crimes. That emergency number is 777. Police say the level of crimes has dropped significantly since the hotline went into effect and night patrols were increased.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, human rights groups say the U.S. should support a comprehensive U.N. arms embargo against both warring parties to South Sudan's conflict. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best way to prepare for a school exam?
To prepare for a school exam? reading. Reading books. If you read, you are preparing for your exam, and you have to be comfortable with your books, because if you are not comfortable and you feel you don't like it, you don't like studies, you can't pass, actually.
Okay, the best way to prepare for school exam is to read the notes that you write in class, and also listening to what the lecturer is teaching in class.
Read over your notes, get your own understanding, and then write what you were able to deduce from a lecture.
Always you need to engage in reading. Otherwise, if you go to school, you don't read, and then you will not be able even to express English in a good way. Yeah, you read, and then you interact with your colleague and share together some of the difficult question.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're still listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nearly 30 South Sudanese and international humanitarian and human rights organizations have sent a letter to President Obama calling on him to support a comprehensive UN arms embargo on the warring parties in South Sudan. VOA's Jody Kapoa spoke with Edmond Yakani, head of the Community Empowerment for Progress organization in Juba, and Nyago Atut of Amnesty International in Nairobi to gauge reaction to the report.
The Obama administration has been reluctant to support an arms embargo on South Sudan. It's reportedly concerned the weapons ban would disproportionately hurt the government. Some European countries and Australia favor such an embargo. The U.S. does support targeted sanctions and travel bans on individuals. In November, the administration said it would circulate a draft resolution on sanctions, but that has not materialized yet. The groups calling for the arms embargo have sent a letter to Mr. Obama that says the conflict that erupted in Juba 13 months ago has been characterized by a complete disregard for international human rights and humanitarian law. It goes on to say that South Sudan's capital, Juba, as well as Upper Nile, Jonglei, and Unity states, have seen gruesome attacks on civilians and massive destruction and pillage that amount to war crimes, and in some cases, acts that should be investigated as crimes against humanity. In Nairobi, Nyago Atut spoke on behalf of Amnesty International.
It is 1 year since the conflict started, and the recent actions by the parties to the conflict do not suggest that the conflict is about to end anytime soon.
The rights and humanitarian groups say serious human rights abuses by government and opposition forces, as well as other armed actors allied to them, have also pushed much of the country into one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. They say nearly 2 million people have been displaced and are vulnerable to possible famine.
The conflict in South Sudan has been characterized by the use of small and light weapons. Most of them have been acquired because people are obviously in the army, and others were able to get them when they were defected from the army, and are also able to capture them. But there are countries that are supplying South Sudan with ammunition. And the longer this is allowed to happen, then the longer the conflict becomes protracted.
Edmund Yakani is executive director of the Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or CEPO. He spoke from Juba.
The warring parties are not much interested in really reaching a solution, peaceful solution. The warring parties are much more interested in sorting out their political differences with a military approach.
South Sudan peace talks are being brokered by IGAD, the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. IGAD heads of state will meet in Addis Ababa on January 18th to assess what, if any, progress is being made. Yakani says as the summit approaches, warring parties are trying to better their military positions.
The military front line is opening up. The last 3 days, there's a military confrontation between South Sudan Army and the rebels. And unfortunately, all the international community are quiet. We have not seen a very strong condemnation on that.
The letter to President Obama also warns that ethnic killings will continue and could drastically intensify. In addition, it says an arms embargo would help to halt the supply of weapons to individuals and groups who have committed serious violations of human rights, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. Jeffrey Duke of the South Sudan Network on Small Arms says that more weapons will mean more fuel to the fire. NGOs have been calling for an arms embargo for South Sudan since early last year. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The South Sudan government and rebels loyal to Machar had opposite reactions to the letter asking President Obama to impose an arms embargo on the two warring sides. The country's information minister, Michael Makwey, had this to say about the letter.
It is an unfortunate document being written by enemies of South Sudan. There is no way you would just say we want an embargo on South Sudan, because once you make an embargo, it is the people who suffer. It is the people whom you are punishing, not the government.
Makwey says the international community should look into who is obstructing peace in South Sudan instead of just calling for a comprehensive arms embargo. He blames the rebels for continuing the fighting in South Sudan and says they should be punished, not the government.
If you are talking of arms embargo, did these people go down to dig and find out exactly who is responsible for not bringing peace to South Sudan? These hasty decisions and hasty opinions, which are expressed by individuals, and then they sell them to the international community and they are accepted blindly, is not acceptable.
Makwey says the government has the right to buy weapons to protect the population and the territorial integrity of the country.
We are a sovereign state, and a sovereign state has the right to buy arms, irrespective of whether they are rebels who are fighting us or not.
He says President Obama should not take the letter seriously. He says it's just an opinion expressed by individuals.
Obama also is a man of his own. He's a leader, and he will have to study it and come up with his own conclusions.
The rebels embrace the letter.
We welcome the arms embargo to the Republic of South Sudan, because we believe that this is why the war is continuing. If the arms embargo is imposed on South Sudan, all parties will now come to terms that the only way to end this war is peace. We are not getting any arms from anybody.
That's Ezekiel Gatkwath, SPLM in opposition Deputy Secretary for Foreign Affairs. Ezekiel says the arms embargo would not affect the rebels because, he says, they are not receiving weapons from any outside parties. He says the arms and ammunition the rebels have are what they have captured from troops loyal to President Salva Kiir.
Salva, since he's buying arms from China, from everywhere in the world, using Uganda as a conduit for the end user certificate, he's still being given some arms, and I would even suggest that it is not going to be just going to be arms embargo alone to South Sudan, but Uganda should be looked into, because Uganda is actually being used by South Sudan to produce end-user certificate, as if it is Uganda buying them, and then Uganda will smuggle them to South Sudan.
Ezekiel says the SPLM in opposition also welcomes the imposition of regional sanctions on individuals deemed to be obstructing peace in South Sudan. Individuals on both sides of South Sudan's warring parties have had targeted sanctions imposed on them by the United States, the European Union, and Canada.
Khalid Albert is a political cartoonist from Sudan. Yesterday, he joined the rest of the cartooning world to mourn the 12 people, including four of France's best satirical cartoonists, who were gunned down in the attack on Charlie Hebdo magazine. Albert spoke with South Sudan In Focus editor Karin Zeidvogel about his sadness, his fears, and his cartoons.
Yesterday, Albay posted one of his cartoons on his Twitter feed. It shows a Muslim man being pulled from one side by a caricature of an extremist, and on the other side by a caricature whose head shows the Western Hemisphere. The extremist is telling the Muslim, "You're with the infidels," and the Westerner is calling him a terrorist. Albay dedicated the cartoon to the 12 people who died in the attack on one of France's best-known satirical magazines, Charlie Hebdo. Among them were two police officers and four of France's best cartoonists.
What really upset me is that, of course, they're fellow cartoonists, and you know they're just doing their jobs. And these are innocent people. You know, they never really killed anybody. They never meant to harm anyone. And what upsets me as well was that Islamophobia is already on the rise in Europe and all around the world. And there's a huge Muslim community in Europe. These are the people who are going to suffer. Going in and killing people who are doing their job is not really solving the problem at all. You're making the problem worse. You're not defending Islam. You're adding oil to the fire, you know?
Charlie Hebdo often featured caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad on its cover. Reports from France say that the two suspected shooters, who have been identified as brothers Sharif and Saeed Kouachi, shouted that the killings were, quote, vengeance for the Prophet.
The extremists are extreme in everything, even dealing with fellow Muslims. They're extremists as well, you know? And I don't think this incident should be blamed on Islam. I don't agree with a lot of what Charlie Hebdo cartoonists used to do, but, this is their right to do. This is their freedom of speech, which they're very proud of, and this is France, and so on. I personally, I don't think I've met a Muslim that was happy about the cartoons, but not everybody went there and shot people.
Albay says he has been steeped in politics since he fled Sudan with his family at the age of 11. Now 34 and living in Qatar, his cartoons often mock Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and South Sudanese President Salva Kiir. One of the cartoons shows a short, plump Bashir removing a petrol pump from a very skinny Mr. Kiir. Albay drew that cartoon when South Sudan stopped oil production in 2012 amid a row with Khartoum over pipeline transit fees. Albay says he is saddened by the fighting in South Sudan.
Part of my family is from South Sudan. It's such a shame because I had so much hope for that new nation. We thought that it's going to be everything that Sudan is not. It's young, it's rich. It has all the factors to be the right country.
He says his life has been threatened because of his cartoons. But he says just as the satirists at Charlie Hebdo refused to bow to threats against them, he has no intention of not drawing cartoons anymore.
So I try to push the limit as much as I can, you know, because you'll never know where your red line is if you don't keep pushing. Or you get shot.
Albay says he has been unable to sell his cartoons to the politically conservative newspapers in the Middle East where he lives, so he posts them online. He says he is working on a cartoon to encapsulate all of his feelings about the attack on Charlie Hebdo and expects to post it on his Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram pages. For VOA News, I'm Karen Zeitvogel.
And that report brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song You're One in a Million by Justin Simpleman.
Been listening to Justin Simpleman and his song You're One in a Million. I'm Lucy Pony.
And I'm Nabil Viaggio, also in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.